Tracy Hall. The date is May 10th of 1996. I am recording from my woolen sack recorder, which used these large tapes to get them on smaller cassettes. So I will start the machine now, which is running on speed 7 1/2.
Well, Mom, I've got a new tape on here. I guess before we get going, I should say that today is Sunday, June the 14th, 1959. And I'm here at my mother's and dad's home at, what's the address here, Mom?
638.
At 638 28th Street in Ogden, Utah. And I'm interviewing Mom on this tape recorder to learn some of the things about her life. This is her oldest son, Howard Tracy Hall, Sr. Well, Mom, you were telling us about your going with Dad, and he was preaching socialism to you, and you were preaching Mormonism to him. Why don't we go on with that story? Okay.
Well, don't you have that about him going down to work to the Mormon bishops? You have that on there?
Well, let's start talking about, what did he say about that?
That your father went down to work for a man down in the southern part of the state who was a Mormon bishop. And, of course, as all good bishops, when someone comes around that isn't a member of the church, he started to preach to him, preach the gospel to him. And your father was converted. That he was not baptized at that time. He came back up home and his work down there was completed and told his mother about it. And he was going to be baptized into our church, and she flew her top right off the right away. She wouldn't allow it. She made such a fuss at that time that he didn't want to displease her, so he didn't join the church. But as I said before, as we walked home from the shows, I taught the gospel to him, told him about it, and about life hereafter and what it meant to belong to God's true church and the glory to be had in hereafter through the feelings of husband and wife and children to parents, that there's no such thing as death do you part. That was the only way to marry. And he was converted over again. He made up his mind that nothing would stop him this time. That he thought to save any trouble or fuss, he didn't tell his mother. He prepared for baptism, and his sister May knew about it. And he went and was baptized in the second ward.
Ogden's second ward.
George Browning being bishop. And he became a member of the church. Well, his mother found it out, and well, she was sure angry. She didn't like it one bit.
Had Dad asked you to marry him yet?
Well, I knew he had those intentions, but there was a war brewing then. World War II. World War One. And he knew he was going to be inducted into the service. And he, although he had been baptized only 6 months, he could not have received a recommend to go to the temple in so short a time. But he proposed, and I accepted him, and thought it, we greatly got back, and
we talked it over. What were the circumstances of that proposal?
Well, we were walking home. Oh, we had moved down to West 12th Street at that time, I remember, and was living in Uncle Dave's house.
Who was we? You and
Blanche? Mother and Blanche and I. We had moved from Coop's. and were living out there. And he would walk from the bus line that mile down to see me. And one night we were sitting in the living room and he reached over and took hold of my hand and slipped a ring on it. He didn't even ask me.
Were your mother and Blanche there?
No, they'd gone to bed. He just slipped a ring on my finger and then kissed me. That's all there was to it. I guess he...
Reading each other's minds, I guess.
Yeah, I guess he was a mind reader. He knew everything was all right and he had complied with the things I had told him. I told him.
Was he already baptized?
Yes.
What?
I'll tell you. I was so afraid my mutual girls would know I was going out with a non-Mormon that when we went to the shows I wouldn't get on the bus. That's the reason we walked home. I was afraid if I got on the bus I might meet some of my mutual girls. And I had been teaching them to keep company with boys within the church and not get married outside the temple. And it would be terrible for them to find me going out with a non-member. I took the outside streets and we walked home so I wouldn't meet any of them.
Didn't Dad still smoke in the early days when you were going with him?
No, he quit the minute he starts keeping company with me. He never smoked once in my presence. He knew in the grocery store that I didn't approve those things before I ever went out with him. Because he had had experience with the Mormons down there in southern Utah. He knew their habits, he knew their way, and he knew I was living my religion. And he always smoked a cigar, never a cigarette.
Cigars, huh? I can't imagine Dad smoking a cigar.
Yeah, he smoked cigars, but I never smelled it on his breath. I didn't know it.
He must have given it up.
Yeah, he gave it up. The minute he said he asked me to go out with him, he quit right then. And he said he knew I was a girl for him right then. That he was going to be inducted into the Army right away. And we talked it over and I said, well, we can't get married before you go. You have to be a member of the church for a year.
What was the day that you got engaged? Do you remember?
Oh, no, I don't remember. 6 months before we was married again.
Must have been in 1918.
Could have been
in the spring?
Spring, early spring.
Early spring of 1918?
Yeah, I think it was, because it was nice walking home from the shows, I know. But anyway, he says, why don't we go talk to Bishop Browning about it? See what he has to say. And we told him about it, and about him going at the service. And we said, now, Bishop Browning, if we was young, it would be different. But we're both getting along in years, and we wouldn't want to postpone a marriage any longer.
How old were you?
I was pretty close to 30 by then, I think.
And Dad about the same.
Mm-hmm. And Bishop Browning says, well, ordinarily we wouldn't do this. But under the circumstances, he says, I'll give you a recommend to the temple, although you've only been in the church 6 months.
Did he know Dad pretty well?
Well, he was a good mind reader. He looked at us pretty close. He gave us a good looking over, and I guess what he seemed satisfied him. We were sincere, and I could give him a good record, and I guess he knew that I wouldn't do such a thing unless I was pretty sure I knew what I was doing.
This was the bishop of the second ward?
Yes, he was.
George Browning. Or was he the state president?
No, he was the state president. Dad had to get his recommend from the bishop of his, of that ward. Oh, I don't know. I just don't remember, really. He must have been the bishop. Because he was bishop before he was president. Yes, he was the bishop. So he gave a recommend, and we went to the temple, and were married, and 2 weeks later, Dad was on the train headed for Camp Lewis.
Now, you were married, what,
14th
of August, 1918.
And 2 weeks later, Dad went to Camp Lewis.
This was in Washington, Camp Lewis, Washington.
And, while he was there, he contracted the flu. You know, that was the epidemic. And all over Ogden, people were dying. They had the newspapers full of pages of deaths every day from the flu. You didn't know who would be taken next. And I was working at Coop's. And my sister Annie and her family, her sister...
You were back at Coop's again? And
or Wilson.
It was Wilson.
Yes. That's a mistake. Sister Annie Butler and her son-in-law and daughter came down with it. And her other son, Mary, couldn't get a soul to go. People were afraid of it. He couldn't get a soul to go there and take care of them. And he came to the store and he says, if you'll quit your job and go and take care of them, I'll give you anything you want. I'll pay you anything to go. I says, well, it isn't the money, it's my sister. And I'll go. So I quit the store and went out there. She had the blinds all down, the doors all closed, and the place was stuffy. I threw up the blinds, opened the window, and she says, we'll all die.
She was going to keep all the bugs out, huh?
They needed it. And she said it was just my being around, go around singing happy and optimistic, that got them better. They were afraid. Everybody was scared to death of it. Her own son wouldn't come in and take care of him. He got me to. He'd call to see how she was and stay out in the street. He wouldn't come near the house.
Hmm.
Heal and Butler. But I stayed and got and told them through. And it seemed like after that I went around quite a bit taking care of people with the flu.
You didn't get it. You
I got it.
It did
but
you?
I didn't have it bad. They made me go to bed, my brother Healing and mother, and thought I was going to be real sick. And he'd come over there and I was sitting with my feet hanging out of the bed and told him I was going to get up.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. I didn't stay down at all. I was healthy and had faith, and I didn't get it bad, but it was a terrible time. Your father's brother, Ralph, died of it on his way to the war in Europe.
Well, did he die in England or on the boat?
In England. He was on the boat and took sick, and they put him off in England because he couldn't live. When the boat docked, they put him in a hospital there, and he died in England. And Howard had it at Camp Lewis. His family all had it, his mother and his sister and all of them at home. And I went down there and helped them out and comforted them and done all I could for them.
Say, going back to Grandmother Hall, she didn't approve of Dad joining the church and probably not of him marrying you. What, can you say something about that?
Now, did she change her mind? I turned the other cheek and was nice to them. When they were sick, I went down there and did everything I could for them. And she said it was the only bright spot in their lives that nobody else would ever come near.
Was Grandma?
And May was particularly fond of me. And she wasn't bitter about it.
Who was at home then, May and?
It's May and her mother.
And grandfather?
And Grandpa, yeah. Howard was at Camp Lewis. Ralph died in England. Sam was home. The oldest boy was home. He was all right. I think he moved out somewhere. Not to be around it with his folks. He just moved out.
So he wouldn't get the flu?
Better, so he wouldn't get it.
Who had it? Granddad and Grandma?
No, just Grandma and me. But Ralph dying, you know. And Howard sick in bed up in Camp Lewis. It was awfully hard for her to take. And they turned to me a lot in that time, and they found out I wasn't such a bad one after all. They learned to depend on me. Well, that flu made them more humble.
Mm-hmm.
It changed their high and mighty ways, you know, and they were more humble. And I was always optimistic about everything. She says, aren't you worried about Howard? I says, no, Howard's going to be all right. He'll get better. And they realized my faith and my courage and my spirit, you know, my attitude, and they, I passed it on to them to a certain extent. But, of course, your father came home from the war and he was awfully weak. They released him. He was ready to go overseas when he took with the flu, but the war ended then. And they let him come home. They released him.
About how long was he in the service?
Oh, just a few months, maybe 5 or 6 months, all told. I'd have the record, but I don't remember exactly. And we lived down on the place Uncle Dave's home on West 12th Street for a while, and then we moved back.
Was that your and Dad's first home?
We stayed there with Mother and Blanche for a while. Mother and Blanche lived there, and we had a room for ourselves there. And that's where little Blanche's two babies died there. We were all living there together. But
did they die before Dad went to Camp Lewis?
No, just after.
After.
And we moved up at the place on 15th Street where you and Shane were born. That's number 513 15th Street.
I took a picture of that little house with the oval window in the front door.
Mm-hmm. We lived in a larger house to the east of it for a time, but before you was born, right before we moved into the smaller house. The other place was sold or something, and we moved there.
Jean and I were both born in that house.
Yes, then. You and Jean were born there. And then we didn't like renting. I always wanted to have a home of our own, and we walked around and saw where there's a large orchard that had been cut up into building lots. And Brother Jepson was selling building lots, and we went up and paid him $10 down and $10 a month on that lot that it was paid for.
How much did that lot cost?
Wasn't very much as property goes now. $120, I believe.
That was the corner of 15th Street and Jefferson, northeast corner.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And before we go on with that house, you used to tell me how I'd run down to watch the streetcars. Was that on 15th Street?
That was. I built a high-wire fence, chicken wire, around the backyard and thought, well, this will keep him in. And the kitchen window was right where I could look out to see if you was all right. I looked out one day and you wasn't there. And I rushed to the front door, and there you was running down the street as fast as you could go in your little red coat. You had a little red coat so I could always spot you. And you was headed, you liked to watch the streetcars go by.
On Washington Avenue.
Yeah. And you was headed for Washington Avenue to watch the streetcars go by, and you got there by the time I caught up with you. See, you were seeing the cars. And Mrs. Shaw next door was watching me, or down there about to wash, and she was watching me run after you. And she often remarked about afterwards and what happened to that little boy later years when I met her. She's prisoner of Lisa Simon, 7th Ward. And it was she and Sister Farr that came and washed and anointed me before you was born.
Mm.
Also Jean. They used to do those things in those days, and they gave me a wonderful blessing. Josephine Farr and Rosetta Shaw.
The women did this?
Yes, just like they do in the temple.
Mm-hmm. Well, they had doctors, though, to deliver the babies. Was it Ezra Rich?
This was a blessing they gave you preceding the birth of the child. They asked me when they were there as the Relief Society visiting teachers one day if I would like to have that done. They said, it's being done in the church and you're worthy, and we can give you a washing and anointing and a blessing for prior to the birth of the child.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do that now, but they did then.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them that would just be wonderful. They said, well, we know how precious that baby's going to be, because every time you come here, you're making the clothes, you're looking the clothes over, and you're getting such a thrill out of making your baby clothes. And
you made all the clothes for us kids, as I remember it, shirts and everything, didn't
you? Yes. Mm-hmm. So they came and gave me a wonderful blessing. And she remembered you when you would be running down there to see the streetcars. But I asked you how you got out. He says, well, I put my feet between there. I said, you can't get your feet between those little, just those little mesh chicken wire, you know. I said, you can't get your shoe between there. He says, well, I reached up and held hold of the post, and then I just put my foot in against the holes anyway and climbed over. I couldn't keep you in.
Mm-hmm.
So then we took this place over on Jefferson, 15th, was it?
Yes.
And
Mill Creek ran nearby.
Yeah. We passed there a short time ago. Dad wanted to go for a ride, and we took a ride, and I said, let's go near the places, or by the places where we used to live. And the creek isn't there anymore. The ditch isn't there anymore that ran along the side of the house and across the front. It's gone. But the house is beautiful. They built on the front, and it's a very beautiful place. The trees I planted are still there.
Hmm.
There was a pear tree and a peach and a plum. I planted that there. They're still there, loaded with fruit. Well, we lived there and in the 7th Ward, you know.
How about that? I vaguely remember living in a tent for a short while.
Well, they were built,
right?
See, Brother Heelan built the 2 rooms. He built 2 rooms for us. And we just wanted to be up there. It was still an orchard, you know, all around. It was shady and nice. And I said, since we save paying rent, let's go up there and live. And we lived in the tent up there for a while he was building it. Just for a short time. And,
Now that house was built with just the back part, and I remember the front, it had a V-shaped roof and was just cut flat across the front to be built on in the future.
Mm-hmm. That's how it was built, just room for us to live then. And then as we got that paid for, we would build on the front. We had a small kitchen and a bedroom and a living room across the front. And Wendell and Donald were born there at that place.
Mm-hmm.
1646 Jefferson, something like
that. Well, now, what year did you move there? 1924, 25?
Well, Dad got out of work. Seemed like he never had steady work after he left his father. He quit working for his father in the transfer business. And he couldn't get work, but they welded some railroaders down at in Nevada. Carlin, wasn't it? Carlin, Nevada.
Yeah.
And I have you and Jean. And we closed up the house and went down there.
This was the house on
Jefferson.
Jefferson and 15th?
Mm-hmm. You remember a little about that.
I remember the train ride, and I remember Carlin, too, mean kids, especially.
And you used to go fishing, didn't you?
Yeah.
With Dad.
Mm-hmm.
And
we lived in a log cabin.
Boys. Yes, all they were log, but they were real comfortable. There was a piano in there, I remember. And we were quite comfortable, but you won't forget the old lady that sat in the window over there smoking across the way. That was quite quite a sight for you boys to see that old lady. She smoked a pipe, didn't she?
Yes, I remember that.
Well, we stayed down there and Dad got laid off. Or how long? No, we stayed 2 weeks. And then we came home. I'll never forget that. I brought you two boys home in a suitcase. And it was so cold crossing the lake. There was no heat in the car and we just nearly froze. We were so cold, I was just stiff. I tried to keep you boys warm, covering you with my clothes.
The wind was blowing, I can remember.
Yeah, the wind was blowing. It was just terribly cold that night. And when we got off at the Ogden Depot, the wind was blowing till I could hardly walk against it.
I can remember that.
There was no streetcars running, hardly. We had to wait.
It was the middle of the night, wasn't it?
No, it was early morning.
Real early
4
morning?
4 o'clock in the morning, real early. And I finally got... Did I get a taxi to take us home?
We got to Aunt Blanche's or something, it seems to me.
No, we went right home.
Did we?
Early in the morning. I'll never forget that. And I just threw some quilts down on the floor and we all went to bed. I hadn't slept all night.
Hmm.
And we slept all day that day.
Hmm.
And then finally Dad had to give his job up at Anderson and came back home. And it was from there that we moved out to Meredith.
The depression was on at
this
time.
Yes, and he never had steady work. We had a hard time to get along. And we sold that place and moved out to Marriott. I thought if there's something out there that I could do to help, that we could both do to help at least earn our living. And you know how we planted cucumbers and,
mm-hmm.
and raised stuff. to help out with the living, and you boys are fishing down the creek and swimming most of the time, though, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Who did you buy that little farm in Marriott from?
It's a fellow that lived uptown here, and he had taken that place on a debt. What was his name? I have a little book showing the payments to him all the time. What was his name? I just can't recall it right now. But we paid him and got out of debt so much a month for that. And Dad finally got work uptown and had to travel all that long distance back and forth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we had cows, we milked cows and sold milk to the dairy, and I had all that to do, and it's so much to do. And that's when my mother came to live with us, you know.
She lived with us for a short time on 15th and Jefferson, didn't she? Maybe she just visited.
Yeah, she just visited us all. But she came out there and lived with us, and she had the room at the West there for a while, and then we finally moved her right into the living room because she had company, and they'd have to go all through the house to get that other room. We put her in the living room, and she lived with us there for quite a while, and that's when Gene had a ruptured appendix and nearly died, you know.
Yeah.
But he got better, and you walked to school. You never did like us. You used to go way around the other road to keep the big boys from beating up on you coming home from school. It was just a bunch of country bullies, weren't they?
Yeah.
And you never did like it out there, although you had some good...
I know lots of things I liked about it. The thing I didn't like was the bullies picking on you all the time.
Yeah,
that was real hard.
They weren't after learning
or
education, and you was. That's the reason they picked on you.
And I was small.
You was an A student.
Most of them were much older and bigger, and they were always making life miserable, day in, day out.
They thought you was the teacher's pet because you got good marks in school, and they didn't. Well, it wasn't pleasant for any of you. We knew that. And as soon as Dad got steady work in town, we sold out and moved back.
So 6430th.
Yeah, that's where we lived there, 6430th. And we were in the award where you enjoyed going to church.
Yeah.
You'll remember that. And you went to Weaver College and graduated from Weaver College. And all of you did well in school. Race students. And that was better for me than living out in the country. Although it was all right for a time on your life. I was always grateful for that experience because you wasn't out on the streets all the time.
Mm-hmm. So
probably wouldn't have been the best companions. You played by yourselves, the old swimming hole and climbing the apple trees and having good times right on our own property, in our own home.
Well, how about some of the earlier life, though? We've got up to a point now where I can remember lots of things. Are there some
mm-hmm.
things when you were a girl? I imagine you lived in pretty humble circumstances, didn't you? Did you have much in the way of food and clothing compared to your neighbors? Or what was the situation?
Well, we had enough to keep body and soul alive, and I guess that's about all. But Mother and Aunt Jane living right together there, if Mother got out of anything, she could borrow a little something if Aunt Jane had it. And if Aunt Jane needed something, she'd come up and Mother would share with her, and that's the way they lived.
How were your clothes when you were small?
Well,
where'd they come from?
We wore hand-me-downs.
Did your mother make clothes?
Mother never was a good seamstress, no. I guess it's just clothing that people gave her as far as I can remember. She and Aunt Jane, she would go to town and work. They had certain families that they went and worked for all the time in their home, you know. And Aunt Jane would take care of us while Mother was gone, and Mother would take care of Aunt Jane's children when she was gone.
This was mainly housework for
yes,
other people?
Yes, housework. But she'd walk to town up the old cellar road back to work and back again.
Long ways.
Yeah, but they did things like that in those days, and they kept us alive, but we didn't have much. I was always quite 10. I looked like I wasn't well fed, but we lived through it, and we were always happy. I remember one little incident that was rather amusing to me. Aunt Jane borrowed some sugar off Mother because she didn't have any, and Mother had some. She borrowed a cup of sugar, and when she got some, she brought it back. Mother says, "Now, Jane, you take that sugar right back home. I don't need it. Now, Emmy, you know when we borrow anything, we're supposed to pay it back." And they stood there and argued back and forth over that cup of sugar, and it was quite interesting to me. But Mother won out. She usually did. She made Aunt Jane take the sugar back home. Now, that's the way they lived. They weren't selfish, you know. What one had and the other didn't, they shared like that. We didn't have much, but we always had plenty of mush. The breakfast tuna, that's good food, and we had chickens and we had eggs.
Let's see, you said you had about 2 or 3 acres there in that house on 12th Street?
I think Mother had an acre and a half, and Aunt Jane had an acre. And
you
we had our own fruit.
Chickens and fruit on that. Plant.
Yeah, it was all in fruit trees, you see, and Mother dried apples, and she dried plums. If she didn't have sugar to can them, she dried them, see. And then if she had a little sugar, she would cook dried fruit. We didn't have everything, but we had enough to survive.
Did you have cows?
Oh, yes, always a cow.
Horses?
And I herded the cows, my brother and I.
Which brother?
In the summer, Harold, next younger than us. He lives in Idaho, you know, down here. Every day we took the cow, of course during school hours we didn't, and between our home on West 12th and the creek bridge way up there, you know, about a block from Washington, it was willow trees all along both sides of the road and grass. And we would take the cows up.